Coming up on Smart Tech Today, Matthew Casanelli and I sit down to talk about a whole lot. But first, I reveal that I am now dual-wielding devices across different operating systems. We get into a large conversation about Wi-Fi, Siri and Spotify working together, ultra-wideband phones, and so much more. You are not going to want to miss this excellent conversation, so stay tuned. Check it out.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This episode of Smart Tech Today is brought to you by FreshBooks, the number one accounting software in the cloud for self-employed professionals and their teams. Make the running of your business easier and more efficient with FreshBooks. Try it free for 30 days at freshbooks.com/STT. Welcome back to Smart Tech Today, where we explain the exciting, dynamic, and sometimes confusing subject that is the Internet of Things. I'm Micah Sargent.
And I'm Matthew Casanelli.
And we are going to guide you through smart switches, lights, thermostats, speakers, and other connected tech so that you out there can make the most of your connected tech. You feel powerful, Matthew?
Yes, I feel the Internet of Things flowing through this house.
I grabbed a smart bulb on the left side and my Amazon Echo on the right side, and I just feel so powerful. Unfortunately, now you won't like me when I'm angry.
Oh, God.
And instead of radiating green, though, it's like a mixture of all of the colors that we have.
It's RGB lights, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. What LED light is he set at today? I wanted to kick off the show this week, first of all, thanking everybody who checked out the first episode, as well as to those of you who have stuck around to hang out with us over on Twitch. That is twitch.tv/twit. We're doing a little thing. We're trying a little something different. We're having conversations over on Twitch and seeing how that goes. Matthew, I think, you know, you've got experience with live streaming from other platforms. And so we wanted to kind of try something a little bit different and see who else out there might be interested in smart tech. So I want to thank those of you in IRC as well for hanging out with us there. And to those of you who are joining anew, like a friend we have here from Kansas City. So thank you so much. But my biggest thanks, Matthew, is to our folks who have gone to twit.community, which is our discourse community forum that Leo has set up and has given us some feedback already for our show. And yep, it's been pretty good, right?
Yeah, definitely. I'm glad to see people in there asking questions, and I've already got multiple shortcuts requests, which is good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so that's kind of been fun. So if you have not yet gone to that site, it's twit.community, and then you can sign up for an account, and from there you'll be able to have conversations with us. You'll be able to have requests that you can put in, feedback, and all that kind of stuff. And one of the things after our first episode was published was an observation that we've got Matthew Casanelli, who comes from the land of Siri shortcuts, and me, who does a show called iOS Today, and so is very heavily invested in Apple tech, that maybe, you know, we wanted to make sure that other bases were covered, that we are paying attention to the stuff that's happening outside of Apple's camp. And I think that's a fair, you know, concern. I think, Matthew, because you and I talked about this a little bit, and we did a lot of talking about Amazon Echo. We did a lot of talking about those things. But going forward, I could see how the concern would be that we left those platforms that have a lot to offer maybe in the dust a little bit. And so I went ahead and sent a message to my good pal Leo and said, hey, you know, this Google Pixel event is coming up, and I assume that all of the Android lovers at Twit who are, you know, hosting shows are going to be getting new Google Pixels. And so after that, do you think I could pick up one of the Pixels that's sort of floating around last year's or last generation's Pixel? And he said, well, I'm taking mine on vacation because it shoots great photos. But afterwards, you could have it. Or you can check out the OnePlus 7 Pro, I think is what it's called. And this is one that has, it's got the fingerprint sensor built into the screen.
That looks awesome.
It's actually very awesome. It's fast. So I have a friend who works at Apple. It was his birthday over the weekend and we were hanging out. And I pulled this out and was like, I know, it's so bad. And I said, I don't know why Apple doesn't do the fingerprint sensor in the screen. And he's like, well, that's because it's so slow. It takes forever. And then I locked and unlocked it several times and it's incredibly fast. So I love that. But my favorite feature is a dorky feature. And that is, and I'm going to show this for the people who are watching, but for those of you who aren't watching, I will describe what's happening after it happens. But I'm going to go ahead. Right now, I've got the camera that's facing backward. I wanted to do the front-facing camera. Did you see that? Did you see what just happened there?
The thing that pops out, yeah.
Yeah, it's got
it's got the little camera. What do you even call it?
Periscope, I guess. A little camera periscope. Yeah. That's so awesome. Goofy and is like the point of failure on this device, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
But in the meantime, like I want to just put a little, I don't know, cartoon character up there and just have it go up and down over and over again. It's so silly, but I think it's a lot of fun. Anyway, this phone is sleek. It's very pretty. It feels great in the hand. And it's got a 90 hertz refresh rate.
Oh, that is nice.
Yeah. So I'm having a lot of fun there. And I just wanted to point out to those of you who had that concern, you have been heard. And we are keeping that in mind. And I will be walking the walk and talking the talk. And I mean, Matthew, you are all in on all the different assistants. So we've really got
definitely.
It.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Is even though Siri Shortcuts is like the... I mean, I basically just worked at there, so that's the main reason that I know so much about it, but that doesn't mean that I'm just going to be talking about it the whole time, for sure. And I think one thing that is nice is hopefully as much of the smart things that we cover as possible will be universal and not just for one platform, because that is, in theory, the benefit of some of this stuff is it's not all completely locked in, but there's all the different standards and all that too, so there's a whole lot of overlap.
Exactly. And some companies really want to sort of make that overlap even more a reality than it already is. Unfortunately, well, I don't know. When I think about the different platforms and what they offer, they can go one of two ways. They can either, apparently I'm turning on an accent here. They can either offer something very unique or they can offer sort of in parallel with what other folks are offering. And it's fun to be a part of all of the different platforms and see how they're all racing and copying and trying to step forward or at least get in line and sort of have feature parity with the other platforms.
Yeah, I agree. I think it also probably was worse a few years ago, like Android stuff or like especially the Internet of Things stuff being so like, did you get Zigbee or did you get the Hue system? And all that sort of has played out a little bit. So that is nice that we're not in like the earliest days of this only works for Apple and this only works for that. It seems like most of them now work across the brands, which is good.
Yeah. In fact, I need to just let's do a throwback here. I remember writing a long article about for iMore about like all the different platforms that are available and what each of them. Yeah. What? No, that can't be it then. Maybe they've updated it. So I remember doing a deep dive into like, what is the best Zigbee, Z-Wave or using Wi-Fi or Bluetooth? And now I think are stepping farther away from that. And it's more about like, hey, what works with the products that I have, as opposed to sort of approaching things from a system standpoint. It's kind of that these products all are trying to be interoperable with the different platforms, no matter what someone gets, which I don't know. I think that that's the better way of doing it because everybody, I think about entry point into this thing. You know what I mean? Like someone doesn't for, you know, they decide they see their friend who has some smart bulbs, for example, and they're like, man, that'd be really cool if I could just control the bulbs in my house with my phone or something. And they're not, in most cases, unless they are like a big gearhead or some sort of nerd where they take the time and go, how am I going to do this just perfectly? Instead, it's like you get one Lifex bulb and then you realize you like it and someone recommends the Philips Hue system. So then you get that and then you've got like six Lifex bulbs in your house, some Philips Hue. It's not so much from the standpoint, I think, of where smart home enthusiasts were in the past, where they really were thinking from the sort of base up.
And especially, I'm just glad that it's not like, oh, you chose to use Android 10 years ago. Now you're locked into one platform for the rest of your life. Like, it is a little more even across all of it. Although that might be, I am a primarily Apple user, and that's probably a little bit more true for Apple people.
You know how I know that's the case is because
you're running into it
because I'm running this stinking phone and all of my Blue Bubble buddies, Bubble buddies, I can't talk to here. And that's really frustrating. So Apple, I know, you know, everybody at Apple is listening to this podcast. And so just, can you please bring iMessage to the web and to Android and to all
those platforms. I heard it's going to be open source, so you have that to look forward to. I believe Steve Jobs mentioned that without telling anyone, and I don't know if that's actually ever going to happen, though.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Doubtful. Highly doubtful. You brought a really interesting topic to the table for us to start with here, because it is, I think, it's wild seeing how smart tech sort of enters the mainstream and in the different ways that it does so. I would love to like read the case study on Amazon Echo, for example, and how that device sort of permeated the mainstream. But aside from that, another place where I see this happening and where it's almost like it has reached the mainstream quicker and more subtly than I have seen with other devices, and that is mesh Wi-Fi systems. Mm-hmm. People are, like everyday people are, you know, suddenly understanding the idea that it makes more sense to have multiple beacons of Wi-Fi in their home than it does to have, you know, one tower that they tuck underneath their bed and expect to give you Wi-Fi while you're sitting on the toilet. That's just not how it works.
Yeah. I mean, you don't want to not have reception in the most useful place to use your phone. Mm-hmm.
The commode is the best place for Wi-Fi.
Yeah. So the news article, the headlines this week are that Netgear has launched a lower priced version of their Orbi dual band mesh Wi-Fi system. And generally Orbi, I think, is on the higher range of things, so it's a little bit more expensive, and so this is good for, I think it just seemed like a little bit out of reach, where especially just in terms of costs, like spending $500 on your internet just to go faster, I think is something that a lot of people didn't consider in the past. But I mean, now that I think about it, there's all tons of like actual politics wrapped up in how fast your Wi-Fi speed is because of just like the ability of providers to be able to charge you a lot of money for the equivalence. Like, I think I have, doesn't Comcast have a, if you hit 1,000 gigs, then you have to start paying more. And that's basically
probably, I think they have a thing where if you download too many photos, then they charge you more. And if you whisper the name Comcast 3 times and they charge you more, they will find any way to charge you more. But yes, I see what you mean.
Yeah, I was definitely paying more for that before. And now I think also just fiber internet is reaching a lot more people. It's definitely not ubiquitous across the US at all, but it just came to the Bay Area in like a huge way, which is even surprisingly late for, you would think, San Francisco type of place. You probably have the fastest Wi-Fi speeds, but not until recently. But I'm pretty sure you could use like in one day Comcast's entire bandwidth limit just uploading files and stuff like that. And I mean, it's like we're also getting into the 4K range, where a lot of videos now are 4K, and that's just 4 times as much footage as 1080p, and so it just ends up taking a ton of space. It's like, I think I'm pretty sure every time I blew through my data cap, it was because I had to restore. It's like when I got a new iPad, it just instantly did the whole thing, just trying to fill up. The iPad itself is like 1 terabyte, so that can use the whole system. But I think what's great about these is, oh yeah, and the other one too is that Eero has relaunched a cheaper version of their...
A less expensive version, we should say.
They have, that's fair. None, it's not cheap, but they used to just plug into walls. That was like an addition to the Eero network that they added. But I think now it's just, that made it harder internationally because they had to have different plugs physically for the thing. So now I think it's more of a standalone product. But I think the reason I thought this was interesting was I own an Eero and I didn't even realize that it does not get gigabit speeds. Like I get twice as much speed as I'm actually getting, which is probably, if you're watching the live stream, my video, I mean, Mike is local to the studio, so his video feed is crystal clear, but mine's like slightly blurrier. And it's like, I'm like, I need to get a wire up here or maybe one of these new systems because
this is frustrating to me. Yeah. So I didn't know this. And you know, I took the time to get the right modem that, you know, would work properly, that I could use my own modem. And I will say, like, I love my Eero system, and I've had it for a long time. To point out, they are a sponsor of the network, so that's just full disclosure there.
Fair.
But longer than I've been a part of Twit, I've had Eero system, and I love my system for the fact that I really don't have connectivity issues that are an issue caused by Eero. It's always the internet service provider. But the fact that I've never been in a place where I've never had the you know, full 1 gigabit internet connection, no matter where I lived. And so it hasn't been an issue. But that is something that, you know, needs to be paid attention to, is worth considering. And those are the things that I think that, you know, everyday people aren't necessarily paying attention to as they're trying out these new systems. Because for the most part, it's, like I said, it's someone who has like a, this is speaking from the Midwest. When I was there, my mom's partner, he had a two floor house. And in that two floor house, it was spread pretty wide. And so he had the main Wi-Fi router downstairs and then two satellite, I can't think of what they're called, like access points throughout the
home. Those extenders?
Extenders, I think that's the
other thing that's confusing about this is I think historically Wi-Fi extenders aren't recommended because it generally, I think it takes the signal it's receiving and then sends what it can of that out further. So that's not mesh. That's just like sending a repeater. And then it's like playing a game of telephone where the further and further you get away, the less the signal there is. Yeah. But these are like extending the same network throughout that, which is, I think that's going to be something confusing too, but I, like you said, I kind of assumed I was good to go and then didn't even realize until I read this story a few days ago that that's why I'm not getting full speeds on my Eero. But I mean, also to be fair, I don't think I should complain about 400 megabytes down because that compared to what I had before or even like my parents' house, I think still has about 12.
Oh and, God.
They're like technology. I did not like that when I was a teenager, let's say. I was always like, you have to get
this. Hold on, I'll get this one photo in about 30 minutes.
Yeah, okay. It's like, takes 30 seconds for a web page to load. And I was like, so Thanksgiving might be a little brutal there. But.
Well, you shouldn't be on your phone anyway on Thanksgiving, so.
Oh, I'll do the thing where I'm making an iPhone. Secretly, I was making a video for the family the whole time, like that ad.
You know what? That ad made me cry. That was a good ad.
Yeah. It's like, oh, get off your phone. He's like, I've actually been making an iMovie of this whole weekend for all of us. It was very,
I kind of want to, I love that smugness that, I mean, he didn't exhibit any smugness, but if I was in that situation, I'd be like, oh, you want me to be off my phone? Well, then you wouldn't have got this.
Yeah.
And then after
it in their face.
Yeah. After the video's over, then I hit the delete button. He's like, fine, you didn't want it, delete. And then I tell everybody, don't worry, it's backed up to iCloud. Anyway, I am excited that we are having these prices dropping a little bit, that we are making it so that these Wi-Fi systems are a little bit easier to put in homes because, speaking from the place of smart tech, you know, we've got these systems that, be it bulbs that have Wi-Fi connectivity, be it robots that vacuum our floors, be it pet feeders or whatever, they are needing to be connected all over our home. And I have a townhouse that's three floors, you know, with the bottom floor like being the garage and the entryway or whatever. And having internet on all three floors is important. And so I am happy to have that system that's set up. But I think about the everyday person who wants to have the ability to just like plug in something and have it work. And yeah. Amazon kind of talked about this at their recent event, their whole product event, that a lot of their new products are going to be certified for the every person. And so they're having them test and make sure that it's easy. And Eero is actually a part of this. The new Wi-Fi systems have like simple setup stuff in place. And I think that that should be a function of no matter what Wi-Fi you choose to have in your home, that it gets a little bit easier for people to set these things up. And a big part of that, in my opinion, is having internet that no matter where it is in the house, you can count on it actually getting to your device.
Yeah, I agree. Especially like, I mean, it is just probably, I'd say, a blanket requirement to do smart tech stuff is, can it work with the internet? It's like the biggest thing. And if you just can't get it, I think the Logitech Pop thing that I have, the one base for it is in like a random room that's a little bit far away. And so sometimes I might still have connection issues, but I do have like weird molding on the walls that I think creates signal bounces. Like it's like paneling. I live in an old, I don't want to, the OPSEC I'm trying to protect. No, I mean, I don't really care. It's just like an old home. And basically, yeah, it's just got like old paneling and weird angles that I don't think they build houses like this anymore. So that's hopefully not as big of a problem. But I do think, I think everybody's experienced the like slow Wi-Fi is worse than no Wi-Fi sometimes because it's just brutal. It's like if it wasn't working, I would put down my phone. But since it's there, you're just like,
please, won't you work? I couldn't agree more. Let's go ahead and move on to the next topic here. We had this sort of taste of this happening back at WWDC when Apple announced that they would be bringing media intents, as they're called, to Siri. And so what does that mean exactly? It means that with Siri, you would be able to control media from apps that make this feature available. Well, there were some rumors and whispers that Spotify was working on this functionality, so that finally, after all of the griping and complaining that came from both sides of the table, both Spotify and Apple, Spotify could work with Siri and Apple Music wasn't the only service that worked with Siri. And so it's here. I'm curious, are you a Spotify subscriber as well as an Apple Music subscriber? Did you get a chance to try this?
I am. And I mostly signed up, I think, when they... This is actually how I got my Google Home Mini, was they had like a family plan. When you sign up for a family plan, you get a free Mini, which was, that was definitely like my motivation. I was like, oh, well, free is pretty good. And then it's definitely like, I do believe when Spotify, was it the Echo Nest that they bought, is the service that actually provides the recommendations. I think this was like 5 years ago. And I remember at the time, because I like Apple Music. I've always liked it because of the Siri support. So it is interesting. Like I do kind of now need to make a reassessment. If Siri support doesn't matter, then that might actually totally change things. I mean, the integration is still nice, but I think like it is just fascinating to see, because Spotify's music recommendations are honestly just better. Like Apple has a lot of human curation, and I think a lot of the not the human curated part, and you can like songs or suggest less like this, but I think it just seems like it's always so pop based. Like I'm someone who grew up with like alternative and kind of rock music, and that's almost like in general not even totally a thing anymore, because a lot of music, a lot of rock type and alternative music has gone more mainstream and like pop based. Like I don't know what you call alternative today is not the same as a few years ago. I'm from Portland, Oregon.
Hipster, man.
I'm just saying, it's like when I grew up, I always thought of bands as like guitar, drums, bass. And now there's a lot less of that. Mm-hmm. That's like a full band and more instrumentalization and stuff like that. But I think Spotify has always been really, really good at that. Like if I want to play like dubstep music all day for work and just completely zone in, when I play on Apple Music, it would be like a bunch of random hits versus like, I feel like Spotify does go deep into like subgenres and the people. Yeah. Like they'd have,
I'm clapping. Folks who are listening may not see that. Maybe you hear the little bit of Foley, but that's because I also have both Spotify and Apple Music, and it is for the same exact reason. Well, I have Apple Music not because of the Siri tie-in, but because Apple Music serves as my music library holder. It is the music library organizer. When I am listening to the way that I tend to listen to music is album by album. So I go and I hit play on a specific album and listen all the way through. But when I'm not in album by album mood, then I use Spotify for its playlists and for its, like, you get six different like daily playlists each day, and a Discover Weekly and this and that and the other. And I love the way that even when I tap play on a playlist, if it gets to the end of the playlist, it can still keep going based on its algorithms and things like that.
That's classic RDO features. That was like the best feature of. Did you ever use RDO?
Let me pour one out for RDO
here. I was gonna say, did you even know about it? Because it could have. It's like not at all. It's completely gone now. But that was always a really nice feature. I don't think I actually fully realize. I don't want to get too much into it because there's lots of opinions about music, but I'm slightly not as big of a fan of like the playlistification of music where I don't know. We're almost in a certain point now where I've been listening to algorithmically based recommendations for like 3 years. And I'm now worried that I get recommendations based off of what it's recommended to me, not something I actually like. And like, that's a whole long-term thing. It's like, are we going to somehow like lose original thought and stuff, or just like you always grew up with this and so you never even discovered something on your own? But that's a whole, I mean, there's a whole mix of stuff there, but
does not compute. No, I get what you're saying. Yeah,
I think Spotify like crushes it in that regard. Like Apple just came out with a new music daily thing and I was like, sweet, this is gonna be good. And then it's like the latest pop song of the day, which is still good, but like I was like, I want more personalized music. And I think I went through and I had to delete like a bunch of old songs because it was like recommending stuff that I really liked when I was 13, and my tastes have changed slightly.
Well, and I think too, with Apple Music, I have discovered more music, more artists, more stuff that I like listening to Spotify than I ever have with any of Apple Music's Discovery stuff. And that's because, you know, two or three times of using the recommended albums that were generated, I ran into the issue where none of the stuff that they were playing for me was stuff that I liked. And so I just don't trust it. So I continue to use Apple Music as if it were iTunes in a big way, because I just go and I, you know, tap artist and I find the artist that I'm really feeling like listening to right now, and then tap on the album that I want to and hit play. But Spotify serves again as the one where I can just, I know if I hit play, it's going to play stuff throughout the day that I will either like, or it will sort of just flow and it feels all right. But we should probably get a little bit more focused again on on the Siri plus Spotify integrations, which I have tested out. And I'm curious, with your tests, were you able to tie in like shortcut stuff, or is it just the basics right now for you as well?
It is just the basics. And I mean, I think the biggest thing is that these are Siri Kit, whereas Siri shortcuts use what's called Siri Intents. So they are actually separate. Like an app adopting like proper Siri support doesn't automatically give it shortcuts.
Gotcha.
And I have been saying, I think I made a video last year where I was like, Spotify, why aren't you making Siri shortcuts? Because people could ask a HomePod to play a Spotify playlist and it would do that. But it's kind of like you'd have to set it all up in advance. And I remember when they sued Apple over not being able to integrate with Siri, I was a little bit like, you guys can technically do it right now.
Probably
it's not the full extent, but I was always like, it's a slightly disingenuous. But I mean, I think the big thing for me that is slightly disappointing is that it doesn't work on HomePod yet. And that's because it does take AirPlay 2 for the HomePod itself to start the playback of a service. Like, you can AirPlay to the HomePod, but that was the first thing. I mean, I think I was like, Spotify is now on HomePod. And then I was like, oh, wait, just kidding. It doesn't work.
Interesting.
So that is, I have a feeling, though, that's probably related to Apple hasn't updated. I mentioned last time it's still on 12.4 and they haven't added the voice matching thing. So I think I have a feeling that will come later this year. And probably I would assume now that they're going to say Spotify on stage. It's like, you can use it. I don't know, maybe we should make a wager or something. Will they actually mention their main competitor? But
oh man,
that it is interesting. It's interesting because they're also on Apple TV. And then I think our other story was that Amazon Music is also on Apple TV, which is interesting.
Now that one surprises me less because Amazon and Apple have been playing nice for a while, but it is still, I think it's a nice thing because I am increasingly of the mindset that the walled garden approach, no matter what company, you know, I'm not just talking about Apple, I'm talking about any company that does that sort of, you know, we're going to offer everything to you, but on top of offering all of these services to you, we're going to make it very difficult for you to use any other services instead. And that approach just rubs me the wrong way. And I think rubs a lot of people the wrong way. And I think that the way that you open up yourself to, at this point, the way that you open up yourself to sell more devices, more hardware and things like that is to make a device that can use whatever system they want to use. And so I might want to get an Apple TV because I feel that it does the best job at displaying 4K, which I'm not saying that, but let's say that that's what I think, that that's the best way to display 4K. But also, I've got a lot of HomeKit-enabled accessories in my house, and I know that the Apple TV serves as a home hub for that. But I've also got Echoes, and I'm all in on that game. And so I've had an Amazon Music subscription for a long time, and I want to be able to use that. Yeah. I think that's great that I can. And be it Spotify, be it Amazon Music, be it whatever, let's let all of them sort of be available so that I can buy the hardware that I love and use the software that I love on it.
Mm, that's perfect. I like that. I mean, I think a big thing too is it is good that Apple and Amazon sort of like let their fist drop from fighting as much when they added Apple Music support to Echo devices last year, because that was good, because there are some people who probably prefer it. And I mean, a big thing is like an Echo costs $25 and a HomePod costs $360. So there's a little bit of a gap in between there where somebody might not afford the HomePod or choose to spend that much on something like that. And then it is just like the having it anywhere makes a ton of sense, because at a certain point, even though, I don't know, it's like Amazon and Apple aren't like totally competing in that space, even though they are on a like functional level. Because like Amazon Music for a lot of people comes from Amazon Prime, unless you're specifically choosing to subscribe to it. So it is like if you already have Amazon Prime, might as well watch it on your TV and not have to sign up for Apple's thing.
Absolutely.
And I remember last year when Apple Music first came to the Echo, it was like mind-blowing, because it was like, why would Apple ever do this? But I think at the time, too, they did the whole shift towards services and stuff like that.
Services. Yeah. In fact, open up my OnePlus here with the embedded fingerprint reader in the I've got a thing to say, but first, Apple Music right here on Android. How fun. I love that I can use my Apple Music subscription. I don't. I just go ahead and use my Spotify thing. But my complaint is this. I am in California. It's very sunny here. There's sun like all the time.
Oh, that sucks.
Your
complaint is the sun.
No, my complaint is not the sun. The sun is great. My complaint... It's not a complaint. The sun is great. There's sun. And so you need a good pair of sunglasses. So I get a good pair of sunglasses. And I had always heard that It takes a little bit of time, but Face ID will eventually let you get into your device even if you're wearing sunglasses. You sort of have that, no, I'm not doing it. No, I'm not doing it. You type in your passcode, and then over time it says, oh, that's Micah. He's just wearing sunglasses. Mm-hmm. My sunglasses are not compatible with Face ID at all whatsoever. I have to be careful. I could see you thinking you're turning your wheels. I added a second face to ID with my sunglasses on. They wouldn't let me do it. It said, you have to take, I can tell something's obstructing your face. You must take that off. You need to stop obstructing your face. So then I was like, okay, well then here's what I'll do. I will register my face twice and just see if that will help. And I put my sunglasses back on and it won't let me in. So
do you have Ray-Bans?
Yeah.
I do think, I was going to say, I'm pretty sure there's specific models that have never worked, but I think my girlfriend, both her and I, have had problems on the iPhone 11 with it scanning our face with sunglasses. And the same pair of sunglasses didn't have a problem last time. So I'm curious if something changed. Yeah.
See, because I used to have no problem. Now, and people in the chat are talking about polarized lenses being the issue.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, no. And the reason why I can say that is two things. One, the pair of sunglasses that I've had for years, I bought them from Tom's, the website that makes, or the company that makes shoes and gives shoes away. When you buy a pair of sunglasses, they give cataract surgery or a pair of glasses to a person in need. And so I've had those for years and they are polarized and I've never had an issue with Face ID. Hmm. These Ray-Bans that I got, go ahead.
I was just going to say, is it only on the new phone for you too? Or...
Oh, so I should probably try my sunglasses with my old phone to see. But these Ray-Bans that I got are not polarized. And they do not let me into my device. So I don't know. I don't think that that's the factor. Regardless, that's a complaint that I have. And with an embedded fingerprint sensor, that was not an issue. So it was kind of cool today as I was like, doop, and I was able to get in. So now I need to add that to the Bluetooth in my car, that phone.
I'm looking forward to the pivot to Android today.
Yeah. Oh, my God. This is a nightmare. I've got to do a show tomorrow called iOS Today, and I'm all in on Android now. No,
yeah,
I'm kidding.
You're just
I'm kidding.
I give up. No.
I think Aunt Pruitt might be here listening, and I don't need him to hear that because he's going to take that and run with it. We have a lot more to talk about in news, but before we get to that, I do want to tell you about our sponsor this week. Again, I'm so excited that that Smart Tech Today is brought to you by FreshBooks. That's right. FreshBooks love us and we love them. FreshBooks takes the stress out of accounting for you and your business with easy to use billing, expense organization, and time tracking all at your fingertips. Now, are you self-employed? Are you stuck in the old days of manual invoicing? You've got to stop wasting time. With FreshBooks, your billable hours and expenses are automatically added to invoices. Easy invoicing means more time to grow your clients list. You can serve them better and share in their success. Do you have a team that you need to keep on track? Well, collaborate with your team on one platform, FreshBooks. You can utilize specific team members by assigning them to the manager role. And this feature allows your second in command to manage projects, billing, and other team members more effectively in a single tool, letting you get to the work only you can do. Now, even if you're always on the go, FreshBooks has you covered because you can download their easy-to-use app today and always have your business with you. You snap a picture of that receipt and capture your expense in seconds. You can respond to clients from wherever you are, and you never miss an update. FreshBooks lets you stay in sync across the desktop and mobile app so you can work on whichever device you prefer without missing any important information. Matthew, you talked about how you never had the issue of dealing with any of the problems that exist for invoicing and billing and those things because you've used FreshBooks since the get-go, right?
Yes, definitely. It's been a pretty smooth experience, which is great.
Awesome. FreshBooks is used and trusted by small business owners, including my co-host Matthew Casanelli, but also people from over 120 countries. With customer service via phone, email, and live chat, you're able to get a quick response to your questions. Make the running of your business easier and more efficient with FreshBooks. You visit freshbooks.com/STT and enter Smart Tech Today in the How Did You Hear About Us section to receive 30 days free. Once again, that's freshbooks.com/STT and enter Smart Tech Today to receive 30 days free. We thank you, FreshBooks, for supporting our new show, Smart Tech Today. Really appreciate you being there with us. All right, let's talk about something I'm incredibly excited about. So it requires my excited voice there. And that's UWB, ultra wideband, on iPhone. This is a multifaceted story. And Matthew, I'm interested. I'm going to do a little bit of explanatory stuff to get this off the ground. And then I've got so many questions for you sort of in the conceptual space. Mm-hmm. So first, I will tell everyone, if you haven't heard about this, Apple said in their new iPhones, and they didn't really talk about this on stage other than a little photo behind Phil Schiller, but on the website afterward, the new iPhone 11 and iPhone 11 Pro have a chip called the U1 chip in them. And this is an ultra wideband chip. And what this does is it's a wider band technology that allows for short range communications that can give you spatial awareness for one, and can give you the ability to transfer if you needed to large amounts, like huge amounts of data, in comparison to what Wi-Fi and Bluetooth can do. It becomes the difference between X amount of feet and X amount of inches for Wi-Fi and Bluetooth to X amount of centimeters. So as much, and in fact, if you, so just the chip on its own, it can detect locations within 10 centimeters, that's 4 inches. But if you add a little bit of magic to that, probably AI and machine learning magic to that, that can get down to as much as 5 millimeters of accuracy. That is wild. So the way that Apple shows off the U1 chip for the start of things is with AirDrop. So folks who use iOS, you may know about the AirDrop functionality. If not, it's similar to some of the other technologies in Android devices that are like nearby sharing of files. So it can be like the Beam technology and stuff like that, although that uses NFC in many cases. With AirDrop, it's a local like Wi-Fi pairing. I think it uses a little bit of Wi-Fi and Bluetooth magic. There's a kiss that happens between the devices, and then it sends the information over. So right now with an iPhone 11 Pro, I can launch the share sheet and share an item via AirDrop, and it shows me this little circle at the top of the screen that has these little tiny dots around it. And my U1 chip in my iPhone 11 Pro Max, wow, there's so many monitors added to that, can tell where another iPhone 11 or iPhone 11 Pro is in the room within mere inches. And so I use this, there was an editorial meeting not too long ago, and I learned about this right before the editorial meeting. And so in the middle of this conversation we were supposed to be having, I decided to interrupt it by saying, hold on, we've got to test this. So Leo Laporte and Lisa Laporte both pulled out their iPhones 11 Pro, and we did a little test. And with them sitting right next to each other, I was able to move my phone to the left, and it knew that Leo was the person in front of me, and his iPhone was the one I wanted to send a file to, and then move it to the right, and then Lisa was the one in front of me, and I was able to send the file to it. Now, that is one example of what the U1 chip can do, and we are just getting started. UWB can be used to transfer data at up to 27 megabits per second. That's faster than Bluetooth LE, but that is slower than Wi-Fi. But the fact is, we are looking at an uncrowded spectrum versus Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, where those are in spaces that have a bunch of other Wi-Fi networks on your, or rather a bunch of other items on your Wi-Fi network clogging up the pipes. This exists in a space that is separate from all of that and makes communication very easy. We'll include a link in the show notes. There are two articles. There's one from iFixit, confirmed Apple developed exclusive tech for the U1 ultra wideband radio. This talks about the fact that Apple did make its own U1 chip, as opposed to taking the most popular U1 chip or ultra wideband chip that's out there and sort of customizing it. No, they completely made their own. And then it goes into more detail about what the ultra wideband chip offers. The other article is from Jason Snell. It's called "The U1 Chip in the iPhone 11 is the Beginning of an Ultra Wideband Revolution." And that article, my God, he's so clever. So Jason Snell knew that Apple wasn't going to talk a lot about what the U1 chip could do because all they talked about was with AirDrop. And so he said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to talk to the PR person of another company that makes ultra wideband chips, because of course this person's going to want to tout the awesomeness that is ultra wideband, even if the chip is not in the actual iPhone 11 Pro. And here's the thing. Who did he talk to? He talked to someone from Decawave, which is the company that makes the most popular ultra wideband chip that folks thought Apple was using as the basis for their U1 chip. So that is a little bit of detail about that. But what I wanted to talk to you about, Matthew, is that another thing that we've kind of heard is that this chip might be used for, we've heard of those. There are different trackers out there. There's literally a company called Tracker. There's another one called Tile. There are several different options for what is right now Bluetooth LE tracking, which sort of like you get up, you walk away, and it tells you, hey, you left your umbrella, silly, and you can go back and get your umbrella. Or, hey, your dog escaped, and you can use the system to track it down. But Apple may be working on a system that allows for tracking items using the ultra wideband chip. And so that can be even more detailed, where I put it on an item and it can say, well, go down or go to the left or go to the right, and be within that level of accuracy to find the item that's missing. So my Siri remote for my Apple TV will no longer get lost in the sauce if it has
that's a great one.
Chip in it. So here's my question for you. First of all, how much have you read about the U1 chip, and are you as bubbling with excitement as I am about it just in general?
I haven't actually gone crazy deep on it. There's not a whole lot beyond the AirDrop example right now. So I think it's a little bit, one thing I do try to do with specifically like some of the Apple stuff is work with what I have now for my videos, because I don't want to like speculate too much in videos that of stuff that will change in the future. But definitely the biggest thing that I'm excited about is similar to the NFC tag support that they added for shortcuts. It does seem like that type of thing would work well with this chip. Should we call it the U1 chip?
Think we'll call it the U1 chip. Yeah.
Because right now you do have to like tap the very top left corner of your iPhone where the NFC chip reader is to the chip, like when you're scanning it, because otherwise you won't, it's just too close. Like NFC is near field communication is very near field. And so this seems like it has a little bit more range while not having the problem of like accidental triggers, because you were just 4 feet next to the thing, but not trying to trigger it. Like now it'll be more like you point your phone at the tag and then it registers it. So that seems nice, because it's both like just the right, like not too hot, not too cold kind of thing. You were talking about the Bluetooth LE chips, by the way, and I do have a booster board, and the remote will start yelling at me if I leave the area, because it's like, careful, you're forgetting your boosted board, basically, which is not something I would want to do. I think it seems super interesting. I don't think I actually knew about the bandwidth capabilities, because that's interesting. Like one of the things that can suck about AirDrop is if you're dropping a large file to somebody, it's like it'll still take 20 minutes and you both have to sit there with it open.
Mm-hmm. I think about that too, because video is one of the things that I like to transfer between my phone and my Mac if the Wi-Fi syncing to get it into Photos takes longer. Let me really quickly just share some of those details.
Sure.
So for one, it's using 802.15.4Z. Right now we've got 802.11ac, blah, 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 blah. But this is 802.15.4Z. And then going on here, within UWB's frequency spectrum, it can utilize a 500 mega, or can you utilize huge 500 megahertz wide channels. So keep that in mind. That number 500 is how much how wide those channels are. Wi-Fi uses 20 megahertz wide channels. So again, 20 and 500, and then Bluetooth uses 2 megahertz.
isn't that signal strength and like interference though, versus the amount of data that you can transfer per, because I'm pretty sure, at least from what I saw, was that like UWB basically won't have connectivity issues. Like if you use Bluetooth headphones when you're in a busy street intersection, like in a downtown area, right, sometimes in the middle of the intersection, your headphones will cut off because you're getting signals from both buildings on either side and it all like crosses right at that point. And so a lot of times that can be like, I don't think Sonos systems work very well in workplaces, because, right, or like busy workplaces like that, because they all connect over Wi-Fi and that spectrum isn't wide enough for that, like 100, like everybody has a cell phone and a laptop and all this plus 50 stories of it, and suddenly there's a lot of signals going through the air.
Well, and it's important to understand the difference between the bandwidth of the channels versus the actual frequency that's being used, because it's all different. So for one, it's built into the name ultra wideband chip. It is using a bunch of bandwidth to transfer the data, and so there aren't those like you said, those connection issues. But it's also important to note, so I'm gonna actually quote from the iFixit article: because it's such wide bandwidth, you can pretty much eliminate the problem that 2.4 gigahertz has. So we'll start there. For folks who don't know, 2.4 gigahertz is the Wi-Fi that many of your devices run on. It also happens to be the same spectrum that some smart devices use to communicate. It is also the same as your microwave oven, which if you've ever had an issue where you were on, if you were playing from your phone to a Bluetooth speaker in your house and you turn on the microwave and suddenly it's going that's because of the microwave oven running on the same frequency and causing issues with the connection there. The 2.4 gigahertz frequency spectrum is overwhelmed with a ton of different devices around the house, including Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, and Zigbee devices, as well as cordless phones, car alarms, and microwave ovens. UWB uses higher frequency ranges that aren't as overwhelmed, and there's really nothing in that space. Some Wi-Fi uses 5 gigahertz, as we know. However, above 5 gigahertz, there's really nothing. So UWB kind of exists in its own space right now, and it's got wide bandwidth to send the data over. So it all adds up to a much better job of being able to make these. Because one of the questions that came up when we were talking about this is like, what is, you know, what are these large chunks of data that are being sent back and forth? And right now it's not about sending large chunks of data. It's about these little transactional communications that happen because they found out, holy moly, this can be used for ultra precise location tracking.
Yeah.
And that's the part that has me excited mostly, because one of the things that they talked about in the article is, you can imagine you go out of an airport and if they're still letting you get picked up by the airport for your Uber or your Lyft, then you can, you know,
like,
you
which
see,
car is this?
Yeah, you see all these cars. And so I can hold up my phone and it says, within the Lyft app, it knows that the driver of the car, this is an example, folks, you have the Lyft app, they have the Lyft app, obviously. You both have phones that are equipped with ultra wideband chips. And so then the Lyft says, oh, well, we've got this extra feature. Go ahead, hold up your phone and look for the yellow balloon. That's the car you want to get into. Yeah. So you can AR look around and find your exact car in this huge crowd of cars. I think that's so exciting. Yeah. Oh, I'm excited.
Especially if you can, like, I think I'm definitely intrigued if you can tap into the chip and use it in ways that aren't just like pre-approved by apps and stuff like that, because then you can have the whole fun of, like, I just imagined I guarantee this will happen, is that somebody who has a Tesla will like drive their car by pointing their phone and stuff
right.
So that's cool. Yeah. I hadn't even thought of that.
Or just like have it on there, have a little chip on a ring or something. And so
the Echo Loop thing.
Yeah, exactly. The Echo Loop. So this is another example of, you know, Apple has adopted this technology, and I think, I don't want to sound like somebody who's like, oh, Apple does something and then everybody's going to do it. But sometimes that does happen. Apple's adopted this technology, and the guy from DecaWave who spoke to Jason Snell is saying this we got very excited about this because this stuff's about to take off. People are already having inquiries about, hey, how do we get this chip? We want to add this chip, da 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 da. So I think that even if Apple isn't ready to sort of open up its own chip to a lot of different devices, we will see that it can, you know, other people are going to be using this and we'll have that there. Now, I did see a question about how far the ultra wideband chip can reach. And I actually do not have that information available right now. If it's as far as Bluetooth, if it's as far as Wi-Fi, or if it's farther. So that is something that we will have to pay attention to. And what I think is going to happen there too is it's going to be another situation of the different communication methods working together and then all playing to their strengths. What is the UWB chip good at? It's good at spatial awareness. What is Wi-Fi good at? It's good at distance. What is Bluetooth good at? Not a whole lot. So I don't know about that one. Bluetooth and I don't get along.
I mean, I don't think it was designed at all for what it's doing now.
Certainly wasn't designed for me.
When you were originally talking about it, if the bandwidth was that much, like the actual transfer speeds were that much higher, my first thought was exactly what you said of local transfer of files through photos as opposed to through your Wi-Fi and then back down. Because that is something that I do shoot video, and video files are massive, and it's very dumb to have it on one device and you're like, we're all right here, but I have to go up to the internet and back down. And also, I think Photos like chooses to how it prioritizes how quickly to upload and stuff. So I'm like, just go. I approve. Please send this. I would love that if it was like you just took a photo, it just syncs over to your iPad real quick and stuff like that. Even harking back to what we were saying earlier, though, of even with gigabit internet speeds, video files are so big. I was totally expecting it to be like, oh, it uploaded in 1 second. And it's like, no, it still takes a long time. So I do think video specifically isn't in that realm. But I mean, I think a big holistically iBeacons came out a few years ago or were like sort of announced. And it does seem like for most people, nothing really came of that. Like maybe your supermarket would say, hey, you're near the end cap of this of aisle five. Would you like to buy some Cheerios? And like people were like, no, I don't want to install your app and get marketing promotions. Like there was a little bit limited use cases. But I think expanding this to just like, I mean, a big thing too is I like that Apple's the one doing this, and because of their privacy policies and their things like that, that
other companies might be precise. Start to like follow someone around the house, knowing their behaviors, and
when the government can see where everybody is.
And precisely, I'm not talking about the government. Another G, whomever, nefarious actors. When they go, oh wow, you know, Micah always goes to. Oh, here's an even better thought: an individual who. Is able to get pregnant. That person goes to the restroom every day for a week, and like to tie those little bits of behavior down and go, I think that person might be pregnant based on the data that we have, and then to start serving that person ads based on that. Ew, that's gross. But on the flip side of that, I am excited about the idea of being in my home and having multiple music output devices in my home. And as I walk room to room, the music follows me.
Exactly. That's, I think this does seem like the internet of things for real, not just like your tech is voice activated, but it's location aware. And I think in Jason Snell's article, he was saying like, I want this on the Apple Watch because that would make a big difference, is being able to walk up to your front door and, yeah, I mean, maybe you don't have to tap your glass screen against the wall or something, but you can just kind of be like, hey, I'm here. I wonder what it is. Fascinating. One thing that happens with Internet of Things stuff is you just develop weird physical stuff that you do. It's like I have a habit with my Apple Watch of I will swing it behind my back when I am walking next to like a brick wall because I don't want to just scrape the screen across it. But like, I noticed that after like a year of wearing my watch, I was like, I do that all the time now. So, well, it'll be interesting to see what how the U1 chip will change. Oh, it's even like, you could just be like, turn off the light and point it at the lights, and the light, that light would turn off.
Then the light turns off, whatever it happens to be.
Do all the weird stuff.
Yeah. And as we're saying in the chat, the idea of having connected devices that aren't internet connected just locally.
Yeah.
I agree.
So that's a great point.
That is one of the benefits that I see with HomeKit, is that you are able to set these things up. What's that face?
I was just going to say, you don't have to be at home. You have to have Wi-Fi right now to use Internet of Things. And now that means it could be anywhere.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that cool. You can just have these things work locally and not have it go out into the world. Be connected to some servers and stuff in different places. So
I do want to say one thing before we move on, is that I have thought the Apple is doing like the Find My Friends network thing, where I think based off of this and iPhones, you'll be able to just like know where your iPad is because it got stolen and somebody nearby has an iPhone and you all like gave permission to like share a mesh network thing like that. But the thing that's I always thought about with that too, this probably could lean into it, is peer-to-peer messaging, where if you're around somebody and there's no cellular data, if you could use iMessage, because that's actually, I mean, especially like we just had big power outages here in the Bay Area and Twit was down last week, and being able to still send messages or like coordinate if I know that,
and
I mean,
Apple
there's other
would
like
eat that up, and other companies would too, but I just like, because I know Apple with the Apple Watch and the security safety stuff, they would eat that up and push that out. That would be great if all of my devices using a U1 chip and with like privacy in mind, of what do they call it? Differential privacy, where I don't know, it's twice shaken and three times blended before it goes.
I like read the whole white paper about it, and it's fascinating. Differential privacy stuff is fascinating because there's like
I'll let you keep that to yourself.
Yeah, I was gonna say it wasn't internal or anything.
No. I just mean I'll let you keep that to yourself because I'll fall asleep.
It is. It's basically like four games of telephone plus one fake game that you mix in the results is the type of
that
mindset.
Sounds cool.
Yeah, it's like just randomized data, but I mean, this stuff is fascinating. I think one thing that will be interesting is how quickly this becomes a thing, because what can happen is that like the iPhone got NFC tag or chips 4 years ago, and just this year we're now able to use it as like a consumer level thing. So it might be that because this is only in the iPhone 11, it might not happen really like fulfill the promise for a few years until more people have these phones. But it is also good that I've heard that iPhone demand seems stronger than in past years. Like people sort of held onto their phones, and maybe now if a bunch of people make the leap and get this new phone, then it'll have a larger base versus if it was like a year or two ago, then it would be even longer of a timeline.
That makes sense. Well, let's go ahead and move on to the next segment, which is where we discuss a project that we're working on or a project that a listener has brought to us. And in this case, I wanted to hear about something that you've been playing around with and getting set up, which is controlling your Xbox with your voice.
Yes, this is excellent. And it's in, I think it's been around on Amazon Echoes for maybe even like 9 months now, but it just came to Google Assistant in beta. And basically, I think you have to join the beta group for Google Assistant. We can put a link in the show notes too. But then once you go into your Google Assistant app, you're able to find something that just says Xbox and you pair it. I think on your Xbox, you also have to turn on like allow voice assistance in settings, but basically, then you can just say, hey, Google, or what was it that we changed it to again?
I don't remember what it was last time, but
we've
got new names soon.
Oh, no. My home hub just went off. Yeah. I said Google. Okay, that one doesn't work. We're going to have to change that. But, so basically, now you can just tell it to turn it on, turn it off.
It being the Xbox, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then also open up apps or games, which is cool. So One thing that is frustrating is that Apple TV doesn't have proper 4K support for YouTube, because YouTube uses like their own codec for 4K that I think they established it as a standard, but it's, I think they were the only ones that adopted the standard, and they are YouTube. So it's like, we're going to do our own thing and that's fine. It's not like we don't really have to deal with anyone else, but it means that on Apple TV, 4K video, you can't actually watch in 4K. It's a little dumb, especially if you bought the product for that. But this way I can basically, anytime I come across a video that I would have wanted to watch in 4K, I can ask Google to turn on my Xbox and then cast to it right away, which is cool.
That's very cool. Now, go ahead.
And
it
does have HDMI CEC support too.
Yes. Can you explain what HDMI CEC is?
Yes. If you have a, like something like your Xbox, which has this connected to a receiver or a TV that also has the same support, it can send the signal to it when you turn it on, hey, also turn on the TV. And so basically now I can just ask Google to turn on my Xbox and it'll turn on my receiver and my TV and be ready to go right away.
Very
I guess
nice.
I still have to tell them to turn on the controller like an animal. No. but yeah, that's pretty fun. And also the a big thing too is just like turning it off when I'm done. Sometimes I leave stuff on to like download and then it'll just kind of sit there for a long time. And so I can just quickly shout out to that and have it turn off. I do prefer the Google one because I keep my Amazon Echo in the kitchen and I don't want to like, yell across the house. Yeah.
I want you to turn off the Xbox. And it's like, sorry.
Hey, I want to play video games.
Video games now. Run routine video games.
Mom, turn on the Xbox now.
Yeah, everybody around you is like, what is he doing? Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty neat. I like the idea of trying to simplify what is normally a multi-step process of turning on all the devices, switching all of the inputs to the right ones to just one thing I say and it automatically happens.
Yeah, because I have a remote for the TV and a remote for the receiver. And the only time I ever had to use those was for the Xbox, because Apple TV also just turns on HDMI CEC when you hit like the home button. And so I could pretty much only use that remote now and then just voice. But the very silly thing is right now, iPhones, if you ask them to play a show on the Apple TV, it will open the app and do it. And there's, of course, new Siri shortcut support and stuff, which is great. But if you ask the HomePod, it's like, I can't do that. And it's like, what? That's something that please update this, Apple, so that it's all parity, because it's so stupid to explain to people, oh, I can do it from my phone, but not the HomePod, the $300 speaker that it's like, so I will gladly own any criticisms that come my way for that type of stuff, because it's some of Apple's stuff is just stupid.
Yeah. I agree. So for me, the project that I've been working on is me, folks. I am my project, and I just needed to do some work on myself. And that is specifically in the realm of, I think I talked last episode and you were ready to shame me. You were very surprised at the fact that I didn't just lift up my device and say, hey, send a message to blah, blah, blah. And it says blah, blah, blah.
I was honestly surprised you don't do that.
Yeah,
because I thought everybody did, but
doesn't everybody do the thing I do now?
Let us know if you do or don't, because I am curious.
Yeah. Out there. Whether you leave that response in over at twit.community or want to send it to us on Twitter or wherever, let us know if you use, and I don't mean dictation, where you tap the button within a message and type it out, because I do that, but from the get-go using Siri to send a message. I find that fascinating. I want to know if you do that. So with that in mind, I have been attempting to be more voice first, particularly because I'm using two different devices. And so I've been using the Google Assistant to do a lot of stuff, including setting reminders and finding search results and asking simple questions of, you know, whatever queries I might have. And so that has led to me doing it more with my iPhone as well. And in particular with my watch, because I have it set so that I can just lift up my watch and then immediately start talking to Siri. And so it's still a work in progress. I don't know if I'm going to stick to it. My problem is that I'm very, I'm a little bit too much of a control freak, and too many times I have been disappointed with the results that I get when I don't just do it on my own. But
does it misspell it or
misspellings, or I think really quickly, and that's not supposed to be like, oh, I think really quickly. I think really quickly. And so things might change in the middle of me, and it's very difficult to go back and make those adjustments and things like that. So it's like, it's a whole bunch of things that result in me. I'm not very good at giving away my control. I agency and all that is very important. So I'm working on it, but what I'm worried about is how much I've been enjoying the Google Assistant versus Siri.
I think that's one thing that, like, Google's crushes it in terms of answers and YouTube functionality, like actual results, not just like, hey, here's what I found on the web for this. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's always funny to, it's like, yes, Google's product is better at Googling stuff, which hopefully
right,
that would
it
make
better
sense.
Be. Yeah.
I feel like I think maybe it is because of my Apple product bias that I'm less willing to adopt something like Reminders through a different platform.
Right.
How has that gone for you? Like,
well, it's only because I'm carrying both, like I'm literally dual wielding devices. And so if
Day
I
phone,
wasn't,
iPhone.
Yeah, exactly. If I wasn't carrying this around with me, then I wouldn't have been notified of the reminder that I had set. So yeah, I agree that for many cases, I love the app Do. And Do is the app that I use for reminders on iOS and iPad and everywhere. That's my app. But I wanted to try, okay, what happens if I have this extra phone with me and I set a reminder? And where will that? I was curious, is it going to show up in my Gmail? Like, where else might it pop up? And I'm sure that there are integrations that could take place that sort of sync things across, because you can use the Amazon Echo with certain reminder apps that then sync to the web and go to your different apps. So I know that those functions are possible, but I just wanted to give it a base understanding to see if it was there, or a base try just to see if it was there and what I thought of it. And like I said, I was pleasantly surprised with the functionality that it gave me. So I'm going to continue to be more voice first than I am right now. I'm still in the process of setting up my smart home at home, and that's just because there are so many things that need to be plugged in and so many devices that need to be renamed, and it's a process, but when that happens, I'll be excited to get to use the Google Assistant and Siri to control these things and see how it works.
Is there anything you haven't enjoyed?
Ooh, that's a very good question. No, I haven't been hit with anything that like the assistant itself has caused an issue with. I think the big thing is like with Siri, I know that Siri works on my iPhone with the iOS operating system. OnePlus is one of many phone manufacturers who make devices for Android. And while they don't have their own assistant, they do have their own operating system that layers on top of Android. And so getting to the assistant, you know, being a little bit confused about, can I just say, hey, boo boo, and have it pop up, or is it going to take work to get there? And it didn't end up being an issue with this, but with the Samsung Galaxy S10 Plus that I have, they've got Bixby and they love their Bixby. And so trying to figure out how to use the Google Assistant around that, that has been a bit of an issue. But other than that, yeah, no poor user experience issues.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've always found that Google's transcription of what I'm saying to it is always really good. Like it's got the smartest AI thing. And I've always heard that the Echo devices are like the most reliable at accepting your command and completing it. I always had trouble with them hearing me, because I feel like I'm always shouting to those versus like the HomePod. I'll be like face the other way in another room and be like, hey, turn on the lights, and it'll do it from there.
It's kind of creepy sometimes. Yeah.
It's like too good in some ways. Maybe those contractors that were listening in before were like, I can barely hear you, speak up. No.
Yeah, they're literally, what is it that he said? Okay.
Yeah, it's close. Yeah. But it is like, I think that's why I was saying, like, that's why I bought the Home Hub. Is I don't think Apple can ever do something that's like this, because it's basically like Google plus YouTube plus Google Photos, and all of those are not things that Apple can do that well. I am fascinated to see if like a more smart screens will come out, because I like buying an iPad and setting it up isn't exactly like a feasible strategy for anybody. No. Of like, I mean, maybe like a mini or something, but even then, like dedicated, like the explosion of dedicated devices like that will be interesting, especially with this mix of all of these voice. It's like they're all, it's almost like parody at a certain level. Yes. So I think everything needs to go further from here. Like there are like Siri shortcut stuff is I'm obviously interested in that. and then I feel like I've tried to build the routines.
That's all right.
Shouldn't have said it. Have you done any like that, like the subroutine stuff?
Yeah. So I've used several Echo routines, and I like how it works in comparison to the iPhone, where you can kind of set it up and have the cute little things where you say have it say this or read this text out loud. But with the Echo, it is very simple for me to say, when I say good morning, I want you to play the news for the day. I want you to turn on this light. I want the actual device to say good morning, Micah. And then I want my playlist from Spotify to start playing. And they make it very simple to integrate all of those different things without much extra work. And particularly those things like, because that's been the biggest issue for me in the past is I love that, you know, through shortcuts, I can do a bunch of fun routines and things like that. But to use the devices that I already have in my home that are things that I can walk around to and have music play from them or whatever, depending on what it is that I'm trying to accomplish. And, you know, the weather gets very easy that it could also give me my, the traffic does or doesn't look bad right now. And it can be snarky. It can tell Joe, like there's just a little bit more of this personalization that makes it fun versus a very sort of buttoned up approach that I get from the shortcuts.
It's like shortcuts is, I mean, I'll be the first person to say that shortcuts has a high learning curve, but it, once you get past that, then I think it does a ton of stuff that the other two can't right now. And so I'm very interested to see as those get just more advanced of like really getting stuff done versus a lot of, I feel like we've covered the basis for a lot of stuff, and shortcuts specifically isn't as easy as like getting all your calendar events for the day. You probably would end up having to customize the shortcut a good amount, and people probably just are like, I don't want to at this point. So I think Apple stuff needs to get the base layer, and like the widest breadth of stuff needs to get way easier so that it's just like, you don't have to learn how to program shortcuts in order to use Siri shortcuts. Like currently that is a little bit true. And so that's like a shame, because a lot of people, I mean, I don't know whether or not you should spend all that time like I have is a different story, because in theory, this stuff saves you time. You don't spend 1,000 hours troubleshooting it, but just being able to get that much further from the beginning and then move on with your life is something that Apple is probably the worst at right now.
To have that viral video of here's what happens if a person breaks into my home and they've got this set up and they have their Hue lights turn green. It starts playing Smash Mouth, somebody. But before it does that, it says, get out of me swamp really loud. Like that was so easy for someone to set that up with their Echo and then record that and show it on the internet, and people, you know, found that funny. And Apple could benefit, or Google could, both of them could benefit from a little bit of that virality that I think Amazon's done a good job of trying to appeal to the every person to be able to set these things up. Yeah. We could talk forever. Clear, but we do have to move on. To the last segment here. So these are our picks and tips of the week, as well as questions and feedback that we may have gotten. So first, Matthew, you wanted to confess. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. You tried to tell me and I wasn't listening. No, what's going on?
I just didn't want to take credit for the theory of the next big thing always starts out being dismissed as a toy. That is like Clay Christensen's disruptive technology theory. And then I'm pretty sure the reason I had heard of it was Chris Dixon published a blog post about it like 10 years ago. And so that has been like something that I've always kept in my mind. And I think is why I'm more open to smart tech stuff than sometimes it can seem silly at first. But I think that's a great, we'll just link that if anybody wants to read the post.
So really, it is I who is misinformed because I had not read this post. And
yeah, I mean, it's
attributed that's, it to
everybody finds something new on the internet all the time that you're like, how have you never heard of that before or something? That's true. And that's just the way you learn sometimes.
You know, half of the things that Julius Caesar said, he didn't actually say. There was a blog post about it about 15 years before.
Exactly.
Same with Shakespeare. It's wild. All those blog posts, man. The next bit of follow-up, we put out the call to different people to come up with some nicknames for the different virtual assistants. And there were great ideas all around, including... oh, golly, now I'm forgetting it. But there was one that had me rolling. It was very funny. I'll try to follow up with that next time. In fact, let me put that down. Funny A-L-E-X-A suggestion, so I don't forget. But the most reasonable answer was the idea of just using the NATO phonetic alphabet as the way to give these assistants nicknames. And there are two reasons. One, it's easy to remember. But two, it's the most likely chance that whether someone tunes into episode 0, episode 1, or episode 312, by the way, I hope you're ready to be doing this at episode 312, it's more likely that they will not be confused when we bring those up because the NATO phonetic alphabet is at least the words. Like when I start to talk about this a little bit more, I think folks will know what I'm talking about, even if they don't get it from me saying NATO phonetic alphabet. It's more likely that they will understand that we are referencing something and go, okay, I know what they're talking about, versus if we do an inside joke from episode 1.
Hey, yeah. Do like it. It's worked so far, but
it's been good. But I agree. The NATO phonetic alphabet is.
Oh gosh!
There plus, you go. See, Goo keeps works. Doing this. So it has to be bleeped. is the way of folks. It's a way for folks to be able to sort of spell out the English alphabet using words that are easy to hear and that are distinct from one another. So. Most often, like that's whenever you're on support calls with someone and they are reading back the information that you gave them to make sure that it's spelled correctly. Also, police officers often use it when they're talking about like license plates and things like that. So Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, Delta. So we're going to go with Alpha for A-L-E-X-A. We're going to go with Sierra for S-I-R-I. And we're going to go with Gulf for Goo Goo. And then, you know, every once in a while when we talk about Bixby, it'll be Bravo instead of Bixby, as well as any of the other ones that might come up, including Cortana, which becomes Charlie.
Nice.
So yeah, that is an easy and much less inside baseball way of handling something that kind of already is inside baseball. Yeah, so just stay posted for that. But we're also going to say, like, the Google Assistant, we can say without there being an issue. Yeah. In fact, it's really just A-L-E-X-A that has the biggest problem because of the fact that that word alone can trigger the device and doesn't need the hey or the... what is the other one for Goo-Goo?
It's just hey. And, for both, yeah.
Oh, you can say okay. You can also say okay.
Oh, yeah, that's Goo-Goo. Right. That was what it originally was, right?
Yeah.
It was only okay? Like, yeah, that's. I'm glad they... slid back on that a little bit. Yeah.
All right. So tell me your tip of the week. This is something that I didn't know was an issue. And I guess it's because I had never set it up, but you have run into this problem.
This is one where I was very surprised that this isn't possible, is the Google Assistant doesn't work with your Google Apps account. And I mean, I'm sure people who are in the space knew that, but I was super surprised that it's like, okay, cool. I have Google Calendar is the best calendar general service in the world. And I like sign up for Google App stuff when I started my business. And I cannot check my work calendar on my Google Home. That is the one large downside right now, is that I'm like, oh, sweet. Now I can see like what I need to do throughout the day from this screen right there. But only if it's personal stuff. It's like no work situation at all. And I was totally surprised by that. That, I mean, I get that a lot of people are like, do you want Google scanning your work calendar and email? And it's like, well, you don't, they didn't have to do all of the creepy stuff necessarily. I mean, I think Google Assistant is better now than it would have been otherwise. And like we were saying, Siri stuff is still behind, but I still was like, so wait, you can't do real work with Google Assistant? Like that seemed very, I'm using the iPad line, of course, but it's like, I was so surprised. And this seems like, I don't, how, what? It's just like, it just blows my mind that I mean, so of course I do have a shortcut that I think takes events that are on my current calendar, and then I can pick from them and send them to my Gmail calendar. So it'll at least show up here. But then I do have like duplicates in my other calendaring apps and stuff like that. So I'm really surprised if this does become possible. Somebody please tell me, or like there might be some sort of beta way. I'm not sure, but it's like I got recommendations to make a separate Google account. And I was like, why did I sign up for Google Apps? I thought this was the, like your paying customers don't actually get to use the smart assistant. So
I don't like that.
I was like, that might be a checkbox in the Siri category that they can actually they use all of your calendar. Like I was like, that seemed, it was just like, it seems like they should.
Yeah, I agree.
I get why they don't too.
All right. Quickly, my pick of the week here is a feature that I've used all the time. It's available in The one that I'm using is available in iOS 13. It's available in Apple Maps. And what it allows you to do is give your ETA to a destination and share that with folks that you know are maybe waiting on you. And it allows them to go in and check where you are on the map. It'll also give them updates if your estimated time of arrival changes for whatever reason. And it's very handy. So I use it, for example, this past weekend, I had a friend's birthday party in Silicon Valley. And so I shared my ETA beforehand. It popped up on his Apple Maps. He was able to see how long it was going to take until I got there. And then he was gone and his roommate was at their place. And so I was able to share it with the roommate. So the roommate knew when I was arriving. Nice. And get it through that. It works very well when everybody's updated to iOS 13, but it also works with folks who are on an older version of iOS or folks who are on another platform by sending text messages. And so it gives you the initial text message of like, hey, this person's on their way. This is the estimated ETA. And I'll text you with a follow-up if that ETA changes. So I really liked having that feature. I used it with Leo and Lisa when I was stopping by to get the OnePlus phone as well. And it's handy. And anybody who has iOS 13, you don't have to have CarPlay or anything like that. It just works with the Apple Maps app. And it's very simple. You tap share ETA and then you tap on one of the faces that's in there. And it makes it super simple to work. And now, Matthew, you pointed out, hey, let's check and see if this also works with other with the other side of the table. And so we did a little test with Google Maps.
Yeah, that's great. It has like the same type of functionality. Although we did run into, it was like share your location back and then you sent it to me and then I tapped it and it was like, do you want to exit driving directions to look at his location? So you, it's like, it thinks you can do it both ways, but then in practice didn't actually work. It's kind of like if you're both going to the same destination, but I was like, it was a little confusing there, but it doesn't have all of the same features, which you were mentioning. Google Maps shows you the battery life.
Google Maps shows you the battery level of the person, which I think is great because my brain immediately when someone's running late or they are not responding to me, they're automatically in a ditch in my head. Like they've gone off the road. They've been in a car accident. A serial killer has escaped with them. Whatever it is, I gloom and doom, worry and concern. And so to be able to see, oh, no, their phone just dropped to 0%. So they're probably in a ditch, but at least I know I can't hear from them anyway because their phone's at 0%. So I think that's brilliant. I would love it if Apple added that. I'm sure it's a secure or a privacy thing that they're worried about, but I think it would be great. We don't have any time for questions and feedback this time, but we We have gotten a few bits of questions and feedback. You can email your questions and feedback to stt@twit.tv. We'll be happy to answer those for the show. It'll also inspire future projects that we might do within the show, and is also a chance, like I said, to share your thoughts there. You can also head over to twit.community. That's the other place where you can share your thoughts on individual episodes or the show as a whole, ask questions. Matthew and I both pay attention to that.
I'd love some projects. Like, give me some project, especially if you are one of those people who's concerned about us being iPhone users. Like, how can you use Assistant or Alpha? There we go.
Yeah, how could you use
And integrated with that, because that type of thing would be awesome.
I agree. We record the show live every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, 2300 UTC. Right now, the best place to get in touch with us is at twitch.tv/twit. If you want to watch live, that's twitch.tv/twit, where we are in the chat room and checking it out. This is an experiment. We will see how it goes and determine if that's the place where you want to watch us. The podcast is audio only. That means you can head to twit.tv, twit.tv/stt, to subscribe to the show in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, etc., anywhere you want to subscribe to the show. And if you'd one day like to see this show in video, well, we've just got to hit 30,000 subscribers. So be sure to share this podcast with your friends if you're enjoying it. The more subscribers we get, the closer we get to clicking on those switches and making the video available to those of you after the fact. But for right now, if you do like video and you want to be a part of that experience, then you can tune in live at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, 2300 UTC. Matthew Castanelli, if people want to get in touch with you personally, how can they do so?
The easiest way right now would be to visit MatthewCastanelli.com or send me a message on Twitter at Matt Castanelli.
Excellent. I am at Micah Sargent on most of the social things, so you can follow me there. And again, don't forget to subscribe to the show at twit.tv/stt. All right, time to tell those assistants good night.
Good night, Alpha. What was the other one? I forgot. No,
good night,
we'll
Alpha.
Have to practice.
Good night, Golf. Good night, Sierra.
Yes.
Good night, Moon. Oh, wait. No, that's a book.